Have you ever been so sure of something, so convinced that you were right, that it was inconceivable to you that you just might be wrong? No, just me? Okay. Well, I wish I could say that I've never had the joy of this experience, but I would be lying. Thankfully, for my own self-esteem, I can't recall all the times that this has happened. But let's just say there have been plenty of times where I was certain I knew something, only to be proven wrong. A recent example happened when I took Noah to his dentist appointment a few weeks ago. It had been on my calendar for months. I received the text reminders and emails the week of the appointment, and I'd even hung the reminder postcard on the refrigerator. So Noah and I arrive at the dentist about 10 minutes before the appointment, and as we signed in, a look of pity came across the receptionist's face. "I'm sorry," she said, "your appointment was yesterday." Now, I was incredulous. "No," I said, "I got the text alerts, it was on my calendar," as I pulled my phone out of my purse to prove her wrong. And then, there it was, right there on those text alerts. I had missed the appointment by a whole day. Well, I quickly realized my mistake and immediately felt a wave of embarrassment wash over me. It was an honest mistake, but I felt bad that I had gotten the date wrong. And more importantly, I was ashamed of the way I responded to the receptionist. I was incredulous toward her. In that moment, I was just so sure that she was wrong that I couldn't possibly have written it down incorrectly, that it was definitely not my fault. But it was clear I had messed up. And so I sheepishly apologized to her and asked if there was any way to reschedule the appointment. While this is only the most recent example of being convinced of something only to realize my own error, it's happened more times than I care to admit. And it really bothers me every time it happens. It bothers me to the point that I'll think about it months later and still feel awkward about the whole thing. Maybe it's because I'm a firstborn and only child, and so therefore I love rules. I love structure. I love coloring inside the lines and making sure that everyone is playing with the same rules. And I hate being wrong. And so I feel a connection to the Pharisees in our story this morning. They are a people of rules. They love their laws and rituals and knowledge. They love their history and the stories they have heard about how God has interacted with their ancestors. They love their God, and they love their God's rules. And they know them well. They have them written on their hearts and committed to memory. They are focused and blameless when it comes to the law. The problem is that we all know what can happen when we get too focused on something. We often miss the bigger picture. We are so sure of ourselves and our situations that we forget to look outside ourselves to see the grand scheme of things. Just as I was so focused on my calendar that I failed to actually read the text messages, so too the Pharisees were so focused on the law that they failed to see their God actually at work. Sometimes myopathy is worse than blindness. The Pharisees were so focused on the fact that Jesus broke a couple rules of the Sabbath that they couldn't see anything beyond that. They were upset that Jesus kneaded the dirt and his spit together in order to make mud, because everyone knew that kneading on the Sabbath was against the rules. And the fact that Jesus healed the man's congenital disease, which surely could have waited until Monday, bothered them so much that they completely lost sight of the God that they claimed to worship and the Messiah that they were anticipating. They were blinded by their own assumptions about how God should act, and in the process, they missed the chance to see God in action. You see, the problem with the Pharisees wasn't that they didn't know enough about God. The problem was that they didn't know God. The blind man knew God, but the Pharisees merely knew about him. The blind man was transformed physically and spiritually. He was restored. He was healed and made new, transformed by the love of God. In fact, he repeats his testimony over and over, becoming bolder with each retelling. The Pharisees instead were suspicious, pointing fingers and laying blame anywhere they could, just to make their point known and prove that they indeed knew more about God. While they didn't know it, and certainly didn't intend to, the Pharisees worshipped a small god that day, a god who could not move beyond God's own rules, a god who could not show mercy, a god who couldn't overcome sin, a god who required absolute compliance by those who worshipped him. Yet the God who actually shows up in Jesus Christ is not a small god at all. In Jesus, we see a God who heals when it is necessary, regardless of the day or of the rules. We see a God who shows mercy to those who may or may not deserve it. We see a God who welcomes and listens and eats with sinners. A God who knows that we will never worship perfectly, and that sometimes we might even be blinded by our own sense of righteousness. But a God that loves us still and reaches out to us so that we too may be transformed. The blind man's healing gives us a glimpse of what transformation should look like. His story reminds us that it does not come easily, but that it requires much of us, including our willingness to risk being wrong. Every time I read this story, I am struck by the fact that the blind man willingly does just what Jesus asks, without questioning or arguing. Maybe he was desperate for a cure, or maybe he knew deep down that Jesus could indeed heal him. Either way, he was willing to risk being wrong. He was willing to risk looking like a fool with mud on his eyes, washing at the pool of Siloam. Christ offered him healing and wholeness, and the man took him up on it. And Christ offered that same healing and wholeness to the Pharisees, inviting them to see the error of their thinking. And yet they turn away, convinced that they don't need Jesus. They fail to see their own blindness because they prefer God to be static and unmovable. Christ is anything but. They want God to act in the ways they would expect, following the rules that they hold so dear. Yet Christ extends the boundaries and pushes them past their comfort zone. As Walter Brueggemann writes about our preferences for God, we would as soon you were stable and reliable. We would as soon you were predictable and always the same toward us. We would like to take the hammer of doctrine and take the nails of piety, and nail your feet to the floor, and have you stay in one place. And then we find you moving, always surprising us, always coming at us from new directions, always planting us and uprooting us and tearing all things down and making all things new. You are not the God we would have chosen had we done the choosing, but we are your people. And you have chosen us in freedom. By the grace of God, we have been chosen by God, even if we never would have chosen this God. This God who invites us to take a chance on Jesus and risk looking at the world through the eyes of Christ. This God who invites us to check our assumptions about the way the world works and the way God works in our world, and be open to seeing things in new ways. We are called to pry the nails of piety out of Christ's feet so that we may follow him as he moves around our world, surprising us with his love and grace and mercy. Because God's love is surprising, and it does show up in the places we would least expect, and it shows up to the people who even us as good Christians might deem unworthy. But in order for us to see God moving in our world, we have to take the blinders of our own sin off. We have to recognize the error of our thinking before we can embrace the things that Christ just might be doing. If, like the blind man, we are ready and willing to take a chance on healing, God will move in us in unimaginable ways. If, like the Pharisees, we are unwilling to see our sin, we will still be blind and unable to see the amazing ways God is working in our world. So the question is, where do we need to take the blinders of our own sin off? Who is it that we overlook? Who do we judge? Who do we fail to really see? Is it the single mom using her SNAP card at the grocery store as we silently judge the items in her cart? Is it the homeless man begging on the street corner, who we know would be just fine if he would just stop being lazy and get a job? Is it the undocumented worker who we think should just follow the rules and do it the right way? Is it our neighbor who suffers from addiction, who we know just needs to pull herself up by the bootstraps and stop drinking? As we each try to answer these questions for ourselves, may we know that if we are but willing to confess our own blindness, Christ's grace is sufficient, and he is there to transform our hearts and open our eyes. He is there to change us so that our faith might become bolder. But friends, transformation is a risky business. But Christ himself invites us to see with his own eyes. So may we be bold enough to risk that transformation, so that, like the blind man, we too may say, "One thing I know, that though I was blind, now I see." Amen.